everything you know will change.
Like to have everybody's attention for a moment.
You the man.
What's that mean? You the man.
And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, now all of a sudden you're stepping up to the next level of competition.
All right, listen up.
Welcome to The Rundown. Here's Desmond Johnson.
It's Saturday, so it must be raining outside. Glad everyone got a chance to paddle in for another edition of The Rundown. Busy weekend in sports. We will get you ready per usual. The Hornets fall a game short of making the 2019 NBA playoffs. What happens next with Kemba Walker? Plus, those NBA playoffs kick off today. We'll take a look at the best first round matchups and get you set up for a great weekend of sports. Magic Johnson stepping down as president of the LA Lakers earlier this week. What does that mean for the future of LeBron James and the Lake Show? Plus, can Tiger Woods win the Masters this weekend? He's only a stroke behind the lead, gentlemen. We'll give you a Masters update here. It's actually raining down in Augusta right now, too, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll check in down there. Plus, the Carolina Hurricanes are in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. And the curious case of Zion Williamson and Nike. All of that plus much more. This is The Rundown. I'm your host, Desmond Johnson, joined per usual by my man, Rod Funderburk. Sawyer Dillon is our producer extraordinaire. Intern Aaron in the house, manning our social media. Our Twitter poll question for today: if you were starting an NBA team, what player would you pick first to build around? Steph Curry, James Harden, or the Greek freak, Giannis Antetokounmpo? 336-777-1600 is the number to call to chime in on any of the topics that we will talk about today. And we're going to start off with NBA and Charlotte Hornets talk, because this is top of mind right now. The NBA playoffs getting ready to begin this afternoon across ESPN and ABC networks. But first, if you want to see the Winston-Salem Dash at the BB&T ballpark this season for only $7, check out the Sports Carolina Monthly Winston-Salem Dash deal. It is back. It's our fourth season in this partnership with the Dash. Go to sportscarolinamonthly.com. Click on the Dash ticket special at the top of the homepage. Get your ticket vouchers and enjoy baseball action in the Triad. Single game tickets, only $7. This is a $16 value exclusively from Sports Carolina Monthly. These are good for the upcoming April 26th through the 28th homestand. Limited supply available. I need to introduce to the Triad Aiden Jensen. He is the host of The Jensen Effect, which airs every Tuesday from 10 a.m. to 12 noon over at High Point University. Please welcome Sports Carolina Monthly contributor Aiden Jensen to the panel. What's going on, man?
Not much. Thanks for having me on the show today, Des. Looking forward to talking sports and telling you all a little bit about the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, absolutely. Aiden's been doing writing our articles for the Hurricanes during this playoff, the stretch run into the playoffs, and he'll be doing so throughout the playoffs following them as well. But first things first, let's get into our Charlotte Hornets here. The Hornets missed the 2019 NBA playoffs by one game, losing the spot to the Detroit Pistons and Blake Griffin. The Hornets have big decisions to make, guys. There may be as many as 8 free agents on this roster. But the biggest question is, what do they do with Kemba Walker? And I'm going to kick it off with my man, Rod. What are your thoughts on this? Because this is a weird situation in terms of the contract, Kemba's age, and where the Hornets are talent-wise in terms of like the rest of the Eastern Conference.
It is a little curious as to what in the world they're going to do with Kemba Walker. You know, I took the time to listen to the exit interview that they had. I'm not sure, Dez, if you listened to it as well.
No, I didn't get
to. You know, but they just asked him, you know, different questions about everything. And one of the questions they asked him was, you know, how is it on being a Hornet for life? And, you know, they asked him what he thought about being a Hornet for life. And Kemba's response was pretty interesting. His response was, I don't know.
Oh, no.
He actually said, I haven't thought about it yet. He said, you know, I know you all want to ask free agent questions so bad, but I just don't know, and I'm not really sure. So I'm like, holy cow, you're going to say you don't know, and that's all we've ever been talking about is about you being a Hornet for life, you being the man in Charlotte.
So
that's one question they asked him. Now they asked him another question. They asked him a question on his competitiveness. Is competitiveness a factor on becoming a free agent coming up? And then his answer was, well, you know, I do want to be competitive because I want to be able to play in the playoffs, which, as you know, it's been a while.
He's only been, what, like once in eight seasons?
Once or twice, maybe.
Maybe. So he said, you know, I do believe that that will probably have some influence on what I do. You know what I mean? So now you're like, what? Are you saying that, you know, Charlotte needs to create something or have a great draft in order to make sure and know you're going to be back in the playoffs next year? Or if that doesn't happen after the draft, does that mean he is going to explore free agency or trade possibility and go somewhere else? You know, because there are two options here. You know, if they go ahead and sign him and give him a big deal and then trade him off, I mean, that's still a lot of money against the books,
like a sign on
the
trade.
Hornets. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, that's what Chris Paul and the Clippers did. That's how he ended up in Houston with a $200 million deal.
Right. The difference is you'll just be able to get some assets as opposed to just letting him leave and not having anything. And then they asked him another question that I thought was pretty interesting. And he said, the question was, you know, what is the determining factor on what you're going to be doing next in your life? And his answer was, well, I want to win. And he said, I want to win like yesterday. And that's something that I'm going to have to really sit down and think about with my family. I got to think about this with my agent. I got to think about this with the people closest to me in my life. Oh my God. And those folks are going to help me hopefully make the right decision. And I was like, those are not answers that sound like Kimba really wants to stay. And they have all this stuff saying he really admires Michael Jordan. He loves playing for Michael Jordan. You know, he loves playing for the only minority owner in the NBA.
Right.
You know, he says all these great things, but this exit interview wasn't what I wanted to hear as far as keeping Kimba Walker. I mean, and so just on those things, I mean, I think there's a strong possibility he may not be there. Something could change. Something could happen and it could reverse. What are you guys thinking?
I'll go. Aiden, you go, and then I'll give my opinion on this, because I'm not as optimistic about what's going to happen here. But what are you thinking about Kemba's future with Charlotte?
So I'm thinking kind of the same. I mean, while I've heard, and I was reading, because I actually went to that game on Wednesday. I was there for a career fair and then stuck around for the game after. And I mean, the significance of the game, not only could the Hornets have gotten into the playoffs, but I heard a lot of talk coming into that game that if the Hornets make the playoffs, Kemba Walker probably will stay. But in kind of like you're saying, that the fact that he said before he wants to stay, and I was reading something, I think, on Twitter or the Hornets website, that he loves living in Charlotte all the reasons that you all said above. But now he's like, I don't know. I'll tell you a couple things. I think that Kemba, basically, if the Hornets want to keep him, they need to sign a couple of, like, maybe one. They need to do a couple 1-2 year rentals and free agency. I mean, because the unfortunate thing is committing so much money to guys like Nick Batum prevents the kinds of guys that they can bring in. Like, they can't bring in a Paul George, or they can't bring in Karl Anthony Towns or Jeff Teague. They're stuck paying Nick Batum. That limits their ability to bring in guys to put around Kemba. That's going to influence him to want to stay. So
that's the number one issue for me. It's that, so you got two situations here. You can, well, really three. You can either re-sign Kemba to the max, and it's probably going to be a super max, because I think at this point he's going to make All-NBA. I think he'll be at least third team All-NBA. He was an All-Star starter. Is he one of the top 15 players in the league this year? I would say yes. So he's probably going to get that. And if he gets that, that's going to jump his max to $221 million over 5 years. Mm-hmm. Kemba is 28, if I'm not mistaken. So this contract would run him through the age of 33 or so. But at the end of that contract, the Hornets are going to be paying this dude like $40 million a year, basically. So you kind of have to ask, is it worth paying Kemba $40-plus million a year when a lot of times – a taller player in the NBA, age 28 to 32, that's their prime. That's usually when, I mean, think of Jordan at 29 or Jordan at 30. He's knee deep in titles. I mean, that's usually when you get to your peak. But when you're a smaller guard, like a Chris Paul type size guard, when you get past the age of 30, it's almost like running backs in the NFL.
Yeah.
You start to decline a little bit. And I'm worried that that would happen with Kemba, because a lot of his game is like, it's not speed, it's like quickness a little bit, like that little stutter step, the crossover, like getting around people. If that goes away, it limits his game. He's 6'1". So logically, I'm looking at it that way. Then it's like, okay, well, if he's not there, why are you buying a ticket to see the Charlotte Hornets? Like, he is the Charlotte Hornets, basically. You got to have him there to draw people to come in to watch the team. But if Kemba's there, they are a 500 team with just Kemba because their talent doesn't match in terms of, like, they've got a group of, like, four guys that are older vets that are getting paid over $13 million apiece. Mm-hmm. Nick Batum, Marvin Williams. I mean, they know who they are. I mean, they know who they are. They're over here. And then you got this young core, Miles Bridges, Malik Monk, Frank Kaminsky, who played great towards the stretch down the end.
Right.
Cody Zeller was out hurt, but, I mean, he's a top five draft pick that we've had in the past. And they're younger than Kemba. They're a good 5-6 years younger than him. So it's like, if you sign Kemba to the max, you're kind of limited as to what else you can bring in unless you can get rid of these bigger contracts that are clogging up the cap. And so far, Mitch Kupchak, the GM, he hasn't figured out a way to get rid of, like, Nick Batum or any of them. Although I will say head coach James Borrego, towards the end, during the stretch run where they almost got in, mm-hmm. he was playing a lot more younger combinations. We saw more Miles Bridges. We saw more Monk got more minutes. Kaminsky got more minutes. And they all played well. I'm all for re-signing Kemba if they get rid of the vets and they let Kemba run with the kids. Because I think that if they just did that all year, they probably would have won 45, 48 games and been the sixth seed in the East and been fine. But mm-hmm. that's the problem. It feels like if they keep Kemba, they'll never be good enough to be a top four seed in the East, but they'll never be bad enough to stink enough to get a top draft pick. So you're stuck in this weird limbo that they were in when they were the Bobcats for a couple years too.
And that was one of the things that he also said in the exit interview, what you just mentioned, Dez, about him running with the young kids. He said he'd been hanging out with Miles and Graham and all those guys. He said he loved hanging out with them. And Aiden, I don't know if you heard it as well, but he said he loved hanging out with them. He commented on how well they played at the end of the stretch. He commented on how, you know, he felt chemistry was coming together with them. And that was probably one of the only positive things that I heard interview right there. But I'll have to also be honest with you. I stepped back and I took a look at it and I said, you know what? Kemba's a great player. He's a great offensive player. But I said, with Kemba combined with the way that the Panthers run that organization, I'm not sure if the Panthers should have just went on ahead and traded him by the deadline anyway.
Oh, you mean the Hornets?
Yeah, I mean the Hornets. Excuse me. Yeah, the Hornets should have went on ahead. Yeah, should have went on ahead and maybe traded him by the deadline because I stepped back. I stepped back and tried to be as neutral as possible. And I said, if you think about it, some of the things you just said, Dez, number one, he's undersized. Mm-hmm. Okay. To me, when you look at him, he's great on offense. But does he really play a great deal of defense?
He's adequate. I wouldn't say he's a top-level defender, but
in my opinion, when you're talking about those max contracts and paying that kind of money, I want you to be able to play a little bit better on defense than what I see Kemba does.
I mean, this is Russell Westbrook, Steph Curry,
right.
Mike Conley money.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. And I'd like to see you be a little bit more better on defense, and I'd like to see you be much more consistent. You know, we've talked in here about there have been nights Kemba will come out, he'll score 30, 32 points, and then the next night he'll score 8 or 12.
He's kind of having to do it all, though, right?
Yeah. I mean, he is, but Michael Jordan had to do it all, and he did it.
Well, that's not fair.
Yeah, of course it's fair. That's not fair. Of course, he's playing for the man. It's always fair.
That's true.
But the thing is, the Hornets probably need to get rid of all their bad contracts, whatever they are. Hopefully they can find a franchise player inside of the draft, and then maybe with that franchise player – attract some other players in free agency who would want to possibly come to the Hornets and make this thing happen. Because the last thing I want to see is Kemba get a big old mega deal the same way Carmelo Anthony got one.
Yeah.
And then it just results in like purgatory or something for the Hornets.
Here's my thing. Free agents don't come to Charlotte, not big name free agents. They never have. Like with Charlotte being a small market, the main way they built teams was through the draft or trades. And mainly it's been luck through the draft earlier on, LJ, Larry Johnson. Mm-hmm. People forget how we landed Alonzo Mourning. Like that first year with Larry Johnson, the Hornets missed the playoffs by one game, went to the draft lottery, ended up lucking out and getting the second overall pick, almost landed Shaq in that draft, which would have been totally different. But got the number two pick and got Alonzo Mourning to pair with Larry Johnson. The Hornets have the worst percentage in terms of getting into the top three of the draft lottery because they ended up with the best non-record for a non-playoff team. They're going to pick around number 12. Who would you like to see get drafted by the Hornets? Who do you think would be there around number 12? Aiden, I'll start off with you.
So, Dez, obviously you're going to have like the top guys in the draft. Zion Morant gone by then. But one thing that I see that I noticed for the Hornets roster this year, they have a lot of big men. Like, they have Frank the Tank. They have Cody Zeller. They have Bismack Biyombo, but I don't think of any of them being like the franchise guy. Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
You see, mm-hmm. you like, and Rob too. You I mean, I don't know how much you all, if you all follow the Hornets like, super intensely. I mean, I try to follow them when I can, but I saw like when we brought in Al Jefferson, I really liked how he was that big body down low, and you saw he would
just
bully.
Kind of broke down at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
He would bully guys down low, and then you. I think we had Roy Hibbert for like half
we
a
did,
season.
Actually, yep. Yeah, we I did, forgot about yeah. that. Yeah. We haven't really had. Yeah. I mean, I guess Cody Zeller's kind of our main post guy, I guess, yeah, but he doesn't really strike any.
He doesn't scare
heart.
Me.
Yeah. So I mean, so are you so, thinking they need to go like big, like yeah. a big guy?
I think the strategy should be maybe to go big and then small and around. You said Des, the Hornets
were 12. Yeah, because they did the tiebreaker yesterday and the Hornets won there. They were tied with Miami and I think it was Minnesota.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, they're picking 12.
I'll say two guys that I'd really like to see. I think that someone dynamic. I would love to, I think the best available would be Bol Bol, the center from Oregon.
I'm so happy you said his name. I was staring at his name, and I was like, that would be interesting if they drafted Bol Bol. You know, we're talking about the kid from Oregon.
I know exactly who you're talking about. I'm a little nervous because isn't he the same kid who had got injured?
He did.
And sat out, you know, probably over half the season with a foot injury. And when kids start getting injured like that and sit out that long, I just worry about them later on, especially when you're talking about the hard, the grinding, the pounding with the NBA and the high pace as well with the NBA. But no, I mean, I can understand you.
Yeah.
And I understand your argument because he is a big man. Yeah, I'm with you there.
He's crazy, huge. Man. I remember highlights from earlier in the year. He's 7'2". He weighs 235. He's Manute Bol's son.
Yeah, but he's a lightweight at 235.
He's shooting threes. Like, he was out there shooting threes for Oregon. I remember he was, like, crossing people up and stuff. I was like, who's this guy? Oh, this is Manute Bol's son. And then he got hurt. Like, it was early, like December, January.
Yeah, he got hurt real early.
And he was like, that's it. I'm good. I'm waiting for the draft. And just never came back out. But, I mean.
And that's the only thing I'm nervous about because he got hurt. You know what I mean? And the guy 7'2". To me, he's like the toilet paper in the wind. He can get knocked over. I mean, you're 7'2", 230 pounds. If you're 7'2", you need to be at least over 260 to me.
Let me ask these two questions real quick, and then we've got Matt on the line in Greensboro, and we'll get to him in just a second. Two guys that stand out that might be right there around 12 if we're lucky, because we're talking bottom of the lottery. We're not even going to talk about if the Hornets. Well, later on in the show, we'll talk about if the Hornets got lucky and moved up from pick number 12. Who would you want to take in that situation? But these two guys might be there, and I'm going to ask your opinions real quick on both of them. Starting off, Cam Reddish, Duke. What would you think about the Hornets picking up Cam Reddish?
Yeah, I don't think Cam Reddish is going to be there, but I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure I really want Cam Reddish. I hadn't really liked his game.
I didn't really see enough from him.
Yeah, I didn't really like his game. Yeah. I just didn't.
Okay.
Like, there's somebody else I'd rather put there, but go ahead.
Nasir Little. He's going to probably still be sitting there around 12.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why, because I don't like his game either. Like, to me, Nasir Little should have came back to the college level.
Both of them should have.
Yeah, he should have stayed in the college level. He had so much more to learn Roy Williams.
If they're saying you're going number 11 or number 10 in the first round, you kind of got to go, right? I mean, that's like $4 or $5 million.
Yeah, I mean, a pair of lips to say anything. I'll tell them that, too, if I'm an agent. I'll be like, hey, man, you're going to go.
You
got to
get out of here, man.
You
got to
go, man.
Now, I forgot about how athletic Nasir Little is. I went back and watched his mixtape from last summer before he got to Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
My man, I totally forgot like how good he really is, and he never really got a chance to get going in a rhythm at Carolina because injuries and stuff throughout the year. Right. But Kemba needs a person that can score 20 points a game every night.
Right. That's,
he needs a running mate, and he doesn't really have a running mate. I hope they let I like Jeremy Lamb, but go ahead and let him go because he kind of outpriced himself this year.
Yeah.
Use that room. They have an $8 million trade exception from the Dwight Howard deal with the Nets, so they can use that, package it with Batum. I don't know. We were high on Bradley Beal earlier in the year, and apparently Mitch Kupchak tried to trade for him, and the Wizards didn't want to do it.
Oh,
yeah.
So, Matt in Greensboro, you are on the line with the Rundown, and you want to talk about Kemba Walker. What's up?
Hey, guys. Real quick on the draft. If they do let Kemba, or Kemba doesn't resign, Kobe White, I don't know if he'll still be there at 12, but...
That's interesting.
They'd be the obvious. I mean, he gives you more size. He has that quickness. And I'm a State fan, but I'm just really impressed with what Kobe White brought, you know, the table-wise. Definitely more size that you need today in the NBA at the guard position. But Kemba, man, I might be a bigger Kemba fan than Hornets fan. It may be best for them to part ways, you know, best for both organizations. That is a lot of money to pay for a undersized guard, Greek going into his 30s. By the end of that contract, you know, he's going to be 32. You're talking about a John Wall situation, or worse. He's always held up. I mean, he's been amazingly durable, especially for the way he's played, the way he plays.
That's true.
It takes a lot of punishment to get into the lane. So I'm a little worried. I guess the reason you might want to sign him is more than basketball, more than what he brings up to the sport. He is the star, the face of the franchise, and the Hornets don't exactly have those guys walking in the door. They haven't been a great job of drafting those guys. They've had a number of top five picks, but, you know, just haven't worked or been unlucky in the lottery. So even if they tank, I'm skeptical they could ever find, you know, another Kemba Walker. So you might keep him, and I think they have an emerging star in Bridges. He may get to, you know, fringe all-star level. He showed a lot this year. So there you have two stars. I mean, in this league, you have to have, you know, two or three, you know, stars. So if you keep Kemba Bridges, try to play out some of these bad contracts for the next couple of years, and maybe you can make the moves. I don't think this team will ever get championship level even with Kemba. But, you know, if you get top four in the East, 50-win team on a regular basis, that's a whole lot better than what they've been for a long time.
That's a great point. Thank you, Matt, for the call. I agree with most of the points that he said. I didn't get a chance to ask him, but we talked about this a little bit last week. I brought up the idea of Coby White with Kemba Walker in the backcourt in Charlotte because people forget Coby White's 6'5", and he shoot. He can score. He can get to the bucket. He probably can get to the bucket better than anyone we saw in college basketball this year, except for Zion Williamson probably. Right. So, I mean, and R.J. Barrett. So, if he's still sitting there at 12, I would love to draft Coby White and put him in the backcourt with Kemba and just let them just wreak havoc. Like, I mean, just literally just let them go at it. I mean, it works for Houston with James Harden and Chris Paul. I mean, you're basically doing the same thing. You're basically going to push Kobe over to shooting guard, or they can alternate like Harden and Paul do, you know, back and forth. I like that. The problem is I don't think Coby White's going to still be there at 12. I think he's going to get drafted way before that. So
where do you think he goes? Maybe down there to Miami to take a Dwayne Wade's place?
I'm looking at
Is that where he winds up at?
The mock I'm looking at has him going to Atlanta at 5, but that doesn't make any sense because they got Trae Young.
Yeah, got Trae Young. That's why I said maybe Miami, because you've got Dwayne Wade, who just retired.
Well, Miami doesn't pick till 13, so
oh, they pick at 13? I thought they were picking at 9.
Memphis is at 7. Washington is 8. New Orleans is at 9, Lakers 10, Minnesota 11, Charlotte 12, and then Miami at 13.
Then he'll probably be there then.
He might be, because there's some names ahead of him where I'm looking at the teams. I'm like, Washington doesn't need a point. Well, they might need a point guard with John Wall being out for 3 years or however long he's supposed to be out for his injury. So they might take a look at Kobe. I don't know. We'll come back to that. We'll come back to that.
Well, even if Kobe's not there, there's a kid from Gonzaga that I like who I think had a pretty good tournament, and that's old Brandon Clark.
Brandon, I saw his name, but it's further down in the first round.
Yeah, but I still like him for, you know, his height, his rebounding, and the way he plays defense.
6'8", power forward. Would they have the same thing as Miles Bridges, though?
I mean, it is, but this guy can play defense, man, and he scores at will. I mean, I just like him. You know what I mean? And he's not a small guy. You know, again, we've got – you're talking about Kemba being at 6'1". You know, this kid's 6'8", and like I say, he plays defense. He's I think his NCAA tournament probably moved him to be in the top 20 in discussion as far as a pick.
I agree with that for sure.
But I wouldn't be mad if they happen to get this kid. This kid, to me, he looks good. I like him.
We got to take a quick break, but next we're going to do a little barbershop talk. Wilt, Kareem, Shaq, Hakeem. Who is the best center in NBA history? 336-777-1600 or at Sports Hub Try It on Twitter. Barbershop Talk, next up on The Rundown.
Clap your hands and stomp your feet.
Yeah! It's
going to be one big party.
Yeah, I'm on.
Back to The Rundown with Desmond Johnson.
Barbershop Talk brought to you by Havoline Express Lube of Kernersville. Their service facility is independently owned and operated by Mac Allen, providing full service repair and maintenance services. They use the latest diagnostic equipment to guarantee your vehicle is repaired or serviced properly and in a timely fashion. Mac and his team pride themselves on commitment to the local community and providing value-driven service in an inviting and friendly environment, go see Mac at Havoline Express Lube of Kernersville for all of your automotive needs. This is The Rundown. I am your host, Desmond Johnson. Rod Funderburk in the house with us this morning, along with Aiden Jensen, Sawyer Dillon on the board, intern Aaron on our social media. 336-777-1600 is the number to call if you want to chime in on our topics today. This is our normal part of the show where we do barbershop talk. And this week it's who's the best center in NBA history. I'm going to let you guys kick it off, but I was just poking around during the break, and I've already made my decision on who this is. But Aiden, you go ahead and kick it off for us. Right. Who do you think is the best center in NBA history?
So I've got to go, Dez. I've got to go with Bill Russell. I mean, look at how well I have some of his stats pulled up. He won the NBA title 11 times, and then, I mean, I know GOAT discussion. I could talk about it separately, but I mean, you talk about a guy, five-time MVP. He made the All-Star game 12 times. Was MVP of the All-Star game 3 times. All-NBA first team. Saw he's a rebounding champion 4 times, and his number being retired. And not to mention, too, seeing when he played at San Francisco in college, he won back-to-back years. I mean, how many times do you get to say, unless you're Joakim Noah and the Florida Gators, that you've won not one but 2 national championships during your college career?
Good point.
And I just, over 20,000 rebounds, 4,000 assists, and over 14,000 points. I mean, that's my pick for best center in NBA history.
I always look at Bill Russell as, like, for me, maybe not the best, like, talented center, but the best winner. You know what I mean?
I agree.
Right. You know, he's the guy that, because towards the end of that Celtic run, he was the coach too, if I'm not mistaken, right? Then wasn't he a player coach?
He was the first minority coach, I think, in the NBA, if I'm not mistaken. And they did a good job of putting that Boston team together. Because if I'm not mistaken, there were some guys on that team who could really play some great offense. And when Bill Russell was coming out of college, he was an excellent rebounder and an excellent defensive player. And they just needed someone to fit that mold there. And I think the Celtics had to do a trade in order to get, I want to say, the number 2 or number 3 pick, where they picked Bill Russell.
Yep.
And then from there on, and whoever they traded to, I can't remember who they traded to, but that team won the NBA Finals that year. But then,
I think it was like the Hawks or something.
Yeah,
it was
somebody. I think it was the Hawks. But then after that, the Celtics won like 9 out of the next 10 years. They won 9 championships.
It's funny to me. People always talk Celtics, Lakers in terms of like the 2 dominant dynasties in NBA history. But really, if you look at it, the Celtics championships all came primarily in that pocket when they had Bill Russell. Like, I mean, those 11 titles that they have, I think, 16 total.
Yeah.
11 of those happened before 1968 or whatever it was.
They sure did.
And the Lakers-Celtics rivalry, what I consider one of the greatest in all of sports.
Oh, yeah.
It was super lopsided. The Celtics were up like 8-0 or something in series wins on the Lakers before Jerry West and Elgin Baylor and those boys finally broke through. And I think the 69 Lakers team, the one that won like 69 games or whatever,
right,
that had my center on it. But that's a great pick, Aiden. I liked that pick with Bill Russell.
What
you got, Ron?
I went with a gentleman by the name of Luau Cinder, also known as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And believe it or not, you know, Kareem retired in 1989 at the age of 42.
Yep.
And at that time, no other NBA player had ever scored more points or block more shots, or won more Most Valuable Player awards in the history of the game. And he was also the only one who had logged a bunch of all-star games, you know, in more seasons than anyone else. He won the Rookie of the Year. He was a member of 6 NBA championship teams. He was a 6-time NBA MVP. He was a 2-time NBA Finals guy. He was a 19-time all-star guy. He was a 2-time scoring champion, a member of the NBA 35th and 50th anniversary all-time teams. And, of course, you know, he also owned like 8 playoff records.
Yeah.
He also had 7 all-star records. And, you know, no one achieved what Luau achieved. You know, he started his career up at the Milwaukee Bucks. Matter of fact, I think it was in their 2nd season when they made Luau Cinder their first overall pick in the 1969 NBA draft.
Mm-hmm. Put him with Oscar Robertson.
They sure did. And at that year, when they picked him, they were 27-55 when they picked him. And that next year, with Lew Alcindor on board, the 1969-70 year, the Bucks went to second place in the Eastern Division. And their record wound up being 56-26. You're talking about a turnaround?
Ever, yeah.
That will win you Rookie of the Year anytime. You know what I mean? And, of course, you know, he went on and he got into the whole religious deal. And he wound up changing his name to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And there were a lot of people in Milwaukee who did not go along with that. And, you know, it was a kind of a heavy time during the, you know, 60s, early 70s at that time when you're talking about religion and all that stuff. That's when I think Muhammad Ali was around and coming up and all that
Jim
good stuff.
Brown, yeah, all those guys. So, yeah.
So, you know, he then demanded a trade to either New York or the Lakers. And during this time is when, you know, the owner was like, okay, well, we'll get you traded. So they wound up trading him to the Lakers. And this is like a year or two after Wilt Chamberlain has retired. And then, of course, you know, nothing else to say about that. Yeah. He finished his career with the Lakers. He teamed up with the guy that everybody knows by the name of Magic Johnson.
Yeah, I'm a little familiar with him.
You know what I mean? They won all kinds of championships. They were, had the love-hate relationship with the Celtics. And he helped the NBA be the NBA as far as that whole East Coast, West Coast, that challenge with the Celtics. And then, of course, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, to me, was one of the best shot guys because he invented the sky hook.
Most unblockable shot in basketball history.
Yes, it was. You could not block that shot if you had a 10-foot ladder.
I don't understand. Why do more big guys not use that shot?
Like, that is a great question.
If, like, Carl Anthony Towns decided to start shooting a sky hook,
it'd be unstoppable.
Yeah. He would average 30 points a game. Like, I don't understand. Exactly. Or Joel Embiid. If Joel Embiid in the offseason decided, you know what? I'm going to spend all offseason trying to figure out how to shoot a skyhook and perfected it and came back next year and just skyhooked everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, you can't block it.
You can't block it.
And I don't know why big guys don't do it.
And there were guys who were, you know, 10 years, you know, his junior, that they could not keep up with Lew Alcindor because they said his workout regimen was ridiculous. You know, they said he did karate.
Yeah.
He ran like a champ. And he said, man, I think it was Magic Johnson who said when Pat Riley was coaching him, Pat Riley would actually go to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and tell him, please stop working out so much. You're doing too much.
Slow down.
Like, yeah, he told him that. But it allowed him to play to age 42.
I mean, Kareem, for me, because I grew up literally the Lakers were the first NBA team that I latched to as a kid, Showtime, because I was, I mean, early 80s, Magic, Kareem, James Worthy. I was already a Carolina fan, so with Worthy being there, that 81-82 team was
Sam
the first
Perkins.
Team. Yeah, so, I mean, I was already kind of – I graduated to the Lakers, and I've always been a Laker fan, even to this day, although they don't give me a whole lot to cheer about right now.
They're rebuilding. Yeah, they'll get there.
They're rebuilding.
They're going to get there.
It's 6 years. Like, they missed the playoffs 5 times in, like, 50 years or something, and they've missed it the past 6 years in a row. So I'm going through it right now.
Yeah.
But for me, I was a little – I was trying to decide between Shaq and this person because Shaq, to me, maybe is the most dominant center that I've seen in my lifetime. Like, Shaq was doing stuff where towards – the middle of his career, he was bullying guys. Like, I mean, if he got it within 5 feet of the basket, it's going in. It's going to go in violently, and you're going to probably be in a picture or a poster or something. But
if he didn't break the backboard.
If he didn't break the backboard. Yeah, I mean, I'm watching Shaq break backboards, like the support systems that, like, make the backboards go up, and now he's breaking those. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But if I got to – if I want to mention the best center in NBA history, you got to go Wilt Chamberlain for me because – I'm just looking through this dude's achievements and scrolling through, and I was literally having to scroll through while both of you were going through these other two. I'm still scrolling through, like, records and stuff this dude had. He's the only player in NBA history to average 40 and 50 points in a season.
Wow.
Score 100 points in a single game, grab over 2,000 rebounds in a single season. He won 7 scoring titles, 9 field goal percentage titles, 11 rebounding titles. He even won an assist title. He averaged 30 points for his career, second best all time behind Michael Jordan. He averaged 22.9 rebounds per game for his career. He's the all time leader. I don't think that'll ever be broken. And he averaged 45 minutes a game for his career. He had a season where he averaged 50 points per game and 25 rebounds a game. For a season, 50 and 25.
That's impressive.
He had 55 rebounds in one game before. He scored 65 or more points 15 times.
Holy cow.
Back when he was playing, they didn't do defensive stats like blocks and steals.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Ramsey had asked one of his statisticians to keep track of Wilt's blocks in big games just so they keep for themselves.
Right.
One night he got up to 25.
25 blocks?
In a game.
Are you serious?
He scored 100 points in a game against the New York Knicks. He has the record for most points scored in a half. Dude scored 59 points in the second half of a game against the Knicks.
I'm assuming they won that game.
That was
game.
The same game he scored 100 in, so that makes sense. Yeah, yeah, they won that game. 50-point game. He had 45 50-point games in one season.
Mm.
He also holds the next most with 30 50-point games in another season. No other players had more than 10. Only Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant have had more than 20 in their careers.
Wow.
So just, I mean, like when you start hearing it out loud, you're just like, why don't we talk about Wilt Chamberlain more in terms of like the GOAT? Because, I mean, he, granted, now, Sawyer brought up an interesting point during the break. And what was it again, Sawyer, that you were mentioning about Wilt and when he played?
It was just like the level of competition that these guys like Shaq and me, even Kareem, are playing versus Wilt Chamberlain with a newer sport. It's really, I mean, when you're that big and you're a grown man, you're, how tall was he? Like
7'2"?
Yeah, I was about to say. I think he's some over 7.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like if I wanted to play on a middle school team, like if all of us, us five in the studio went and played Kernersville Middle School, like we're going to put up numbers.
That would be great. We should put. Oh, we should hook that up. Now, we should just show up at a playground, be like, hey, let's do this. And they're like, y'all are grown men. But no, this is what Wilt was doing. Like,
he was the man. Now, I wish I could go back in history. And the reason why I say that is because I hear you, Sawyer. I don't know if, you know, just no competition or anything like that. But I did do a little bit of research, and I want to share this story about Wilt. In the 60s and early 70s, there was a player in the NBA by the name of Gus Johnson. Mm-hmm. And he played for, have you ever heard of him, Aiden?
I've heard of him.
Yeah, Gus played for the Bullets. It was the Washington Bullets at the time. They said Gus was kind of like a Charles Barkley of the 60s. He was very strong. He was quick. He could leap. And he was listed at about 6'7", 240 pounds. And he didn't have as much fat on him as Charles Barkley did. Well, one day his team was playing Wilt Chamberlain's Lakers. And Gus came down and dunked the ball on Wilt Chamberlain.
Oh.
And they said that Wilt did not like that.
The story is not going to end
well. Yeah. Yeah. So Wilt kind of, you know, felt some kind of way about that thing. So later on in the game, Gus got the ball on the fast break. And the only guy between Gus and the goal was Wilt Chamberlain, of course. Ooh. So this time, Gus is going up. He's going to his leap. Wilt went up, jumped, and went straight at the ball with one hand. So imagine Gus has the ball in his hand. Yeah. Wilt stops the ball. It's still in Gus's hand, and Wilt's one hand stops the ball. It said that Gus stopped in midair. He hit the floor, and he didn't get up. And when they examined him, Gus had suffered a dislocated shoulder at the hands of a block shot by Wilt Chamberlain. So that is a strong guy. I mean, that is strong. I mean, imagine somebody like a Charles Barkley going up for a dunk, and then they get their shoulder
dislocated. People are saying Zion's going to do that to somebody.
I believe it. I mean, he could. He's big enough. He's strong enough to. And they said that, you know, Wilt would always play. He said, hey, the basket's sitting right here. There, we know where everybody has to go. There's no other place you can go.
That's a good point.
So he's like, I don't understand. Yeah, so he was like, I don't understand why there aren't more block shots. No. And then there was another player, if I could just share it with you real quickly. This guy was named Johnny Red Kerr, farmer Johnny Red Kerr.
I've heard him.
He got dunked on by Wilt Chamberlain. He said he got dunked on so hard when the ball came through the net, the ball hit Johnny Kerr's foot and broke his toe.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, if that is not strength, I don't know what strength was. Johnny said he played it all.
Winner.
And he said he knew his toe was broke as soon as the ball hit it. But he couldn't let the fans know that because he was playing at home. So he went down. So he tried to jog down the court and acted like he tripped over himself by mistake and fell to the court before the ball got to the other side. But he told the truth in the locker room. He said, my toe was broken when Wilt dunked it and the ball slammed down on the floor and hit my foot.
Real quick, could Wilt play in today's game?
I think he could.
I think he could.
Oh,
too.
No doubt.
I think he would be Joel Embiid, but just more just,
you know,
just vicious, I think.
And that's it. And he could play, but, you know, even with what you said, Des, with him being vicious – he'd file out because the game's not the same. You're talking about playing in an era where I'm sure
there
were
even 3-point line
physical. Yeah, playing, so. There was no 3-point line. There was no shot clock. You could probably be much more physical than what they are now. So he would foul out, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think also like when Will was playing, I think what he could do is he could just sit in the paint in the entire game. And I think like modern NBA, you have guys like Joel Embiid who can literally play the entire floor.
I think he kind of like, maybe go out and I mean, can you see Wilt shooting threes?
I don't think he'd try to shoot.
I don't
threes.
Think he'd try. Yeah. But, I mean, the way that today's NBA is today, he'd end up signing with the Golden State Warriors anyway, and it wouldn't even.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Put Wilt out there with the Splash Brothers. let's take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with the Masters. Can Tiger Woods win this thing? Plus, we take a look at the NHL playoffs. The Carolina Hurricanes are down 0-1 to the defending Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals. Can the Hurricanes win this series in advance? We'll try to break it down with Aiden Jensen in studio next on The Rundown.
Okay, let's go.
You're listening to The Rundown with Desmond Johnson.
For the latest coverage of ACC sports, Panthers, Hornets, high school, NASCAR, and much more, check out Sports Podcast, powered by SportsCarolinaMonthly.com. Weekly podcasts like A Stone's Throw with Ryan Stone, The Four-Man Rush, Panthers Podcast, episodes of The Rundown, and more. Now available via Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, anywhere podcasts are available. That is brought to you by Ray's Auto Body and Wrecker Service in Winston-Salem. You are locked into The Rundown as we head towards our second hour here in just a bit. I'm going to talk a little hockey. Normally, you know, us here in The Rundown, we normally don't get into hockey here because we don't know a whole lot about it, which is why Aiden is here with us, Aiden Jensen from High Point University. He's going to give us some reasons to watch the Hurricanes as they take on the Stanley Cup defending champ Washington Capitals in Game 2 today, 3 p.m. on NBC. First, though, we have Morris on the line from Jamestown. He wants to talk about the Hornets. So before we get away with that, let's get Morris on the line. What's up, man? You're on the line with the Rundown.
Well, yeah, I want to talk about the Hornets. I've been a huge Hornets fan since they first started back in the late 80s. I was a season ticket holder. And,
nice.
And I was really frustrated with Mitch Kupchak this year because it was such a pivotal year for the Hornets, you know, in keeping Kemba or not. And when he did not make a single move and before the trade deadline, I was really frustrated with that. I think he tried, but I think he could have gotten, if not a star player, at least some good role players around Kemba, like Sabonis from the Pacers or Bogdanović from the Pacers. Mm-hmm. Both good players. T.J. Warren from the Suns. I think he's somebody like that could have helped him a lot. You know, sure, we need star players to get us to the final goal of the championship, but to improve our team a lot, he could have gotten some players, some good players, I think. And I'm just really frustrated with Mitch.
No, I feel you, Morris. Thank you for the call. And I did hear, and I didn't know this until maybe a couple of days ago, that Mitch Kupchak did try to trade for Bradley Beal to trade deadline, but the Wizards just, they weren't trying to hear it because of the John Wall injury.
Yeah, Wall was hurt at the time, yeah.
But they did, and we were very high on Bradley Beal coming to the Hornets when it first came up. We were like, that would be a perfect fit for Kemba. That's the 20-point scorer you need in the backcourt with him.
Right.
Bradley Beal, Kemba Walker, Miles Bridges, Frank Kaminsky. I can work with that, you know, right, in the East. Yeah. That would be a 4 or 5 seed there and gives you a shot. But, yeah, we're frustrated, too. We're going to talk more about the NBA draft as we get deeper into the playoffs here as well. But let's get into this. First off, let's get Masters scoreboard update. It's a 5-way tie at the top of the standings. I don't even know how to pronounce this dude's name. I'm gonna try. Louis Oosthuizen. Yeah. I'm jumping into a swimming pool or something. Louis Oosthuizen, Adam Scott, Brooks Koepka, Francesco Molinari, and Jason Day are all tied at the top of the leaderboard at 7 under par. The Lewis guy, I'm not going to try to say his name again. He goes to 225, and then the rest of them follow him. Tiger Woods is one shot behind the leaders at 6 under par. He starts at 205 today, and this is going to be all day and tomorrow. I think this is the best two rounds he's played in a major since 2012. The elephant in the room, can Tiger pull this off? What do you guys think?
Well, I hope he can pull it off. I think he can pull it off. I think something's just going to happen. It's been like every time we're thinking Tiger is going to pull it off. Something always happens.
Did you see the guy that tripped him?
He doesn't. Yeah. It's crazy. It's just like something.
Yeah.
I mean even if it's just the weirdest thing, man.
So Tiger, I forgot what hole it was on. Actually, I've got it here in front of me. He was on the 14th green. He hit his shot. The whole crowd's watching it go off. They're cheering for him. And he's starting to walk away, and like the guy, the crowd is trying to run down the embankment or whatever like a couple feet from him. And security is trying to outrun them to keep them behind. And one of the security guys, he puts his arms out and he slips and he falls. And when he falls, he clips Tiger Woods' like right leg.
Oh,
like as he's trying to walk away. And for a second, it was like, oh, I think you just sprained Tiger Woods' ankle because he starts limping away from it or whatever. Oh. Got to the cup, hit the birdie for the hole. And kept on going. So I mean, it was a weird experience watching it on TV.
I don't want to be that guy, but someone said Grayson Allen found his way to oh, security at the Masters.
Yes,
I love it. Grayson I love Allen, it.
Yes, I didn't get a good look at the guy too. That would have been pretty cool if somebody photoshopped Grayson Allen in there. I think he. I mean, he's having some trouble putting a little bit, but
heard that.
Man, you want to talk about. I'm not going to be able to see this. I'm going on vacation literally at 3 o'clock today, and I'm not going to have access to TV or my phone or anything for a couple of days. And I'm starting to think Sunday is going to be one of those red shirt Tiger days where everybody's following him around or whatever. You start hearing them footsteps, man, and it's Tiger with that gallery following him around all over the place on a Sunday. It could get real interesting. And he's the only person I can think of in sports that can do that. He's the only person I can think of where he's doing something and people start talking about it and all of a sudden everybody starts watching it at the same time, in real time. There's a Twitter alert, Tiger's making a charge or whatever, and then people just start blocking the TVs, and most of them don't watch golf.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me.
Yeah. I mean, I was just looking forward to him just really getting it going because I think when he started his second 18, he just caught fire after that first early birdie. Yeah. You know what I mean?
The buzz is still there.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing, but I love it. And I'm not a big golf fan, but the past 5 years I've started watching more golf because of Tiger Woods.
Right.
And when he gets on one like that, when he starts hitting those birdies and pumping the fist and getting the crowd into it and stuff, it turns into a whole different game.
It does, man.
This is exactly what Augusta wanted. They wanted him at the top of the leaderboard to carry through to Sunday. Because if he's a shot back or in the lead, heaven forbid, on Sunday.
They're not going to catch him.
Man, CBS is just sitting their fingers crossed please, Tiger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's going to have some serious ratings, man. And it tells me one thing, too. He's finally getting over his whole personal disaster with his wife. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Finally. And I know things like that take time. And as you know, I've harped on that all year long. I said Tiger needs counseling.
Tiger's flaws.
Yeah, I was he needs counseling, man. He hadn't gotten over the issue with his wife. But that can be serious, man, when you have an issue like that.
All the Hooters restaurants are going out of business. I read an article about them a couple days ago. They're all like a relic of the 80s, and that was kind of where Tiger was going to meet new friends.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I don't know where he's supposed to go now.
I was listening to something, and it said, would you take Tiger Woods on just any major over under 1.5 wins for the rest of his career? Do you think he'll pull out 2 major wins?
Two?
I mean, I don't know, because there's just so many good guys. Like you were saying, Brooke Koepka, Jason Day, Justin Johnson, Adam Scott, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas. All those guys are just so consistent. It's really hard to... I don't know if he's just still got it. I want him to still have it, but it's just there's so much good competition now.
The talent level, I think, is higher than what it was, 12 years ago or whatever, when he was at the peak of his powers. But these guys, the talking heads in golf, they amuse me because they're all Brooks Koepka is not afraid of Tiger Woods, or Jason Day and scared to play with Tiger Woods. Put them in the final group with Tiger Woods when Tiger Woods is at the top of a leaderboard on a Sunday and let them experience that crazy nonsense. I think it was the PGA Championship last year. It was him, and I think it was Rory McIlroy. They were the last group together.
Yep.
And Rory was just like, what in the world? The crowd got so big, it was swallowing them as they were walking to each green. Nobody does that in sports. Nobody moves the needle like that. And they can say all they want until they get hit, put in the situation. Like Mike Tyson said, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face.
That's right.
After that, everything changes. So I don't know. We'll see if Tiger can kind of keep this going and pull it off, but he tees off today at I think that's the 2:05. So watch that for sure. Also here in North Carolina, we do have some playoff action. The Carolina Hurricanes are down currently 1-0 to the defending Stanley Cup champs, the Washington Capitals, in the opening round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Game 2 is today at 3 p.m. on NBC. Aiden has been covering the Canes for SportsCarolinaMonthly.com. Buddy, give us a couple of reasons why me, Rod, Aaron. Sorry, you don't watch hockey, do you?
No. Okay. I've been to the Thunderbirds game, which was a great time, and I would love to go again. But so you can't watch it. I can't watch it on TV. But the games are fun.
So the room is against you. We don't know a lot about hockey. We really have no idea what's going on. But we've been told that we're supposed to root for the Hurricanes because they're the local team. They haven't been in the playoffs in Lord knows how long. I think a decade or something.
Since I was in sixth grade, and now I'm in my last year of school. So
so give us a couple of reasons why us here at the Rundown. Why we should tune in and root for the Hurricanes.
So I could talk about this for hours and hours, but I'll simplify it down.
Give us the good ones.
Okay.
Yeah. Give us the hot ones here.
Well, first off, one major thing that I think of when I think of the casual sports fan trying to watch hockey, one thing I hear from my friends at school and just people I talk to maybe in the local community is people love seeing fights at hockey games. I know personally myself, I love the physical aspect of
the game. Before you go further, when he gives a reason, if it's a reason that you guys approve of, hit the ding button because I
can
fights.
Live with that one. I like going to a fight and the hockey game breaks out.
Okay, perfect. Aaron, chime in too because I feel like we need to learn more about hockey going forward because they might be around for a little bit or they might be out next week. I
just think the NFL could benefit if they implemented the whole fighting thing. You know,
I like that. I like that
Someone
idea a
said
lot.
That, yes. A couple weeks ago, who was it that said that? It was Eminem. Was talking about wanting to have the AAF. Have them put fights into the games to make them more exciting.
Yeah, man, let them take those helmets off, I guess, or leave the helmets on, whatever.
Yeah, man, if you leave the helmets on, you're going to break your hand. Good grief.
I feel like the dude, who's the dude from the Jaguars that did that? Fournette to get a fight with somebody. Now, somebody else, it was like a cornerback or somebody.
That was Jalen Ramsey and AJ Green, I think.
Yeah, they got a fight, and they're swinging at each other's helmets. It's
one
like,
of my favorite wide receiver DB fights was Andre Johnson and Finnegan.
Yes,
that's
great. You try to punk him.
Well, what about even Deion Sanders had one with Ryzen, didn't he?
A little bit, nothing like that. I mean, they were like trying to steal each other's chains and stuff. Like they were like backyard trying to talk hockey.
Here comes the NFL again.
I know, right? Hockey. Back to hockey. Yeah. Aiden, sorry, we didn't mean to steal the shot.
No, you're
so,
good.
So fights. You got a ding for fights. So give us another win.
So fights. I mean, it just. This team is very physical. You have a lot of guys.
Do they fight a lot? The Hurricanes?
There's not a lot of like one-on-one dropping the gloves, but I mean, you'll see after the goalie covers the puck up, you'll see a lot of guys get into little scrums, try to energize the crowd. I personally think it works. I mean, I play a lot of video game hockey too, and whenever I get into a fight, I always start doing
better. You're out there looking for a fight.
I lead the league in penalty minutes in career mode, so that tells you something.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so fights, you got to fight. Do
fights include the cross checks, the cross body checks? Is that what it's called?
Am I saying
it right?
No, you are. Yeah, the cross checks, I mean, that might instigate one. So, say a guy takes offense to a cross check. You might be like, hey, I don't like that. And then after, like, there could be a play going on, and then you could just have a guy cross-check someone and then literally just drop the gloves in the middle of an offensive run.
I'm here for this conversation because I've always wondered how do fights start in hockey and why are they legal? Yeah. And you're kind of explaining to us, like, how these things go down.
Yeah.
I'm here for this conversation.
Can you explain also to the listeners what a cross check is, just in case they don't know?
I'm going to be honest, not super entirely sure, but to my knowledge, it's when a guy takes his stick and he tries to, I think, kind of check the guy with his stick,
in the middle of his body, right?
Yeah. To my knowledge, that's what it is.
Yeah.
That's legal? You can do that?
Yeah, so imagine somebody skating full speed, and they come at you like, say, a fullback who's coming through the hole to block the linebacker, right? But instead of him blocking you with just his hands and his forearms, he has the stick in his hand. And so the stick hits you in the chest. That's a cross check.
And that's legal.
No, I mean you can do that. It's a penalty that's called. Like, you, if someone's just randomly skating, so say I'm skating up the ice, Dez, and then like you randomly just cross check me, and the puck's nowhere near me, you get called for a penalty. But like you can do that. Like if you're trying to prevent a guy from screening the goalie to get an easier goal,
you're just trying to cause some trouble.
Yeah. But
I highly suggest doing this. I spent like 3 hours one day. By a couple months ago, just looking up hockey fights mic'd up because they mic the players up.
Oh, it is the best thing
you'll ever watch. Yeah. I mean, the guys are like, hey, you want to drop? And they're like, yeah, sure, why not? And they just drop, fight it. And at the end, you know, their bloody nose, they're like, hey, man, good fight. Well, and then they just drop and they go back out there. It's just the weirdest thing.
Damn this. Like, I'm going to do that. I don't know if I'm going to have that much time
to
do it like that. But yeah. So, all right, what else besides fights? Yeah. Because right now you kind of got us hooked on the fights.
Hey, like I said, I think that was a good one to start off
with. That was very impressive.
One thing that I really like that I think you all should tune into the Canes is they're a young team. I mean, I love watching seasoned vets. They know the game, whether it's hockey or any other sport, but they're the youngest team in the league. I'm gonna go all nerdy here for a little bit. Average age of 25.7 years old. So I mean, they're a young team. Their top two of their top players are not even 22 years old. That tells you something about the future of that team.
Yeah.
I mean, as you can imagine, with this youth, they're fast. They skate really well. Their passing has been. I've watched Canes teams in the past where they've struggled to get good passing, and they've been slow teams, but that kind of like the Houston Astros in baseball, all their draft picks and stuff are finally starting to pay off. And something Andrei Svechnikov, one of the Canes, who's actually their first round draft pick this year, he had the Canes only 2 goals in game 1 against the Capitals. And he joins, I think, a list of like 10 or maybe even 8 players who have scored multiple goals before their 21st birthday in the playoffs. I mean,
so we need to look out for this guy. Then.
Yeah, Andrei Svechnikov. Listen for
Andrei
that name.
Andrei Svechnikov. Where is he from? Is he
that Rod?
Is he from the Ukraine? I guess. Yeah, or somewhere in that area.
He is from Russia. I have no clue where we're at, but someone was telling me. One of my suite mates was telling me that. I don't know if you all have heard of the name Alexander Ovechkin Someone, my suite mate was telling me when he was watching the game that Svechnikov and Ovechkin were like talking trash to each other on the bench. So I mean,
like in Russian.
Yeah, that's actually, he said they were cursing at each other in Russian. Which
the most frightening thing I've ever heard of. I'd
be like, cussing at each other. Okay, I'm going to back away from this.
we've kind of run out of time, but I think you did good, buddy. You did. I didn't know why I would watch, but I'm here for the fight. So, but I don't know. We'll figure this out. But we got some time. It's a best of 7 series, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, Dez. I think. I mean, I might be a little biased because I'm a Canes fan, but I would be surprised if they didn't win game 2. A lot of guys on that team don't have playoff experience, except for maybe Justin Williams, their captain, but they have the game 1 jitters out of the way. And from my knowledge, I think they've played well in day games this year, but we'll just have to see. I expect a good game from Washington.
Well, if they advance, we'll definitely have you come back for another Hurricane segment to keep us in the loop, because we do try to get this info out to the Triad, and I do feel like we've neglected hockey literally all year on purpose because we don't really know anything about hockey, so we don't want to, you know. But I got somebody that can do it.
Yeah.
We'll have you back in here. But, Aiden, great job, man.
I appreciate it, guys.
We got to take a quick break. When we come back, NBA playoffs kick off today. Can the Warriors three-peat? Is Milwaukee the team to beat, not the Warriors? We'll look at the playoff matchups and give our thoughts on who will advance. Plus, Giannis versus Harden, who deserves to be the league MVP? First, though, Voice of the Dash, Joe Will, will stop by to talk Winston-Salem Dash action. And IMG's Ryan Stone will join the panel for the second hour. We catch up on the NBA and the Dash next on The Rundown.
What's up, dog?
Think about it.
A party?
Are we having a party? Yeah!
Back to The Rundown with Desmond Johnson.
Dash fans, BB&T Ballpark's 10th anniversary season is underway. Learn more about our great promotions like Thirsty Thursdays, all you can eat for free nights at ws-.com. Purchase single game tickets for as low as $8 by calling 336-714-2287 or visiting ws-.com. You are listening to The Rundown. We are now joined by the studio host for App State football and basketball broadcast for IMG and Learfield Sports. He also hosts A Stone's Throw with Ryan Stone, a weekly sports podcast you can find on SportsCarolinaMonthly.com and Spotify each week. Please welcome Ryan Stone to the panel. What's going on, Ryan?
Good to be back, man.
Yeah. We were going to have Joe Weil right here. I don't know if we've got him or not. So while we're trying to get in touch with him, I think the game – well, they did play the game last night. They lost 3-6 to Potomac. They're supposed to have a game tonight. It's Chick-fil-A four-pack night at BB&T Ballpark. It's 6 p.m. first pitch versus Potomac. We'll find out if we've got Joe here in just a bit. Oh, we do have Joe. So we do have Joe on the line here. Voice of the Dash, Joe Weil, on the line with us as he is every week here on The Rundown, just giving us a quick checkup on the Winston-Salem Dash. Joe, what's up, my man?
What's going on, Dez? What's happening?
Hey, man, just checking in with you. I wasn't sure if they played the game Friday night because of the weather, and I know we've got a game scheduled tonight at 6 p.m., correct?
Yes, so we have, our MVP already through two home games is our grounds crew. They deserve nice. all the credit because we had all this rain come down yesterday, and they got the field ready. We started it on time at 7 p.m., and we got the game in. Unfortunately, we lost, but credit to what they did on the field, the grounds crew, just making sure that we were going to be okay. But we do have a game tonight as well. The rain is supposed to stop in the early afternoon, so once that does, we'll get the field ready and get going. And it's actually a pretty cool night at the ballpark. We hope people can come out because we actually have a food truck festival that's going to start at 4 p.m.
Really?
Nice.
Come on out to the ballpark. We got six different food trucks. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. And I know, obviously, people in this area love food trucks and then love enjoying that type of stuff. So why not get some, watch some Dash baseball and also get some good food, too.
Yeah, you said food truck, and all of our ears perked up. We're like, yeah, food, I know, food truck right? festival. What? What's going on over there? But, just real quick, and this is just your quick check-in with The Rundown each Saturday, the state of the affairs with the Winston-Salem Dash here with Joe Weil. Joe, how are you feeling with the team so far? Because I know they started off great. I think they opened up with the first sweep like in a long time for Winston-Salem Dash, and then they dropped three to Wilmington on the road. Now they're back home finally. They had you guys on the road your first, five games of the season?
Yeah, it was actually first seven. So they got us out and pretty far away, too. So they got us in Frederick, which was about a five-hour drive from Winston-Salem, and that's in Maryland. And then we went to Wilmington, which is in Delaware, and then came back, and that was a 7.5-hour trip. So as I joked, I think, with somebody earlier, they're trying to exhaust us early in the season by getting us out to the furthest spots. But they went 3-4 on the trip, now back home. They won the first game. It was actually in pretty exciting fashion. Luis Robert, our top prospect, hit a go-ahead two-run home run in the bottom of the eighth inning to dead center field to give us the lead. We won 8-6 on Thursday. Yesterday we dropped it 6-3, but I'm hoping to get back on the winning track today.
Okay, awesome. So definitely check out the Dash today at BB&T Ballpark. A 6 p.m. Start, correct?
Yes, that is correct. And again, the Food Truck Festival, for those that are coming out, especially you guys, you just said you're salivating, come out to the Food Truck Festival. 4 p.m. is when that is supposed to begin.
Awesome. Well, hey, Joe, we'll definitely check you out. And the whole tribe needs to keep in mind Winston-Salem Dash action here on the Sports Hub every Thursday night with Joe Will on the call. I heard what you did with the line for the drive again this week. Excellent work, my friend. I'm sure they'll toss you something. Well, we're actually going to be on vacation. Me and Josh are out Thursday and Friday, so I don't know if they're having you on this Thursday or not before the game, but we will definitely broadcast the Dash game per usual at 7 p.m. this Thursday. But Joe, we will be talking to you soon, my friend.
All right, thanks, Des. Appreciate it.
All right, buddy. So that's Joe Will from the Winston-Salem Dash. Let's get into some NBA talk here because the playoffs are about to start in a couple of hours, and I'm trying to pull up the playoff schedule here. First, Nets and 76ers will kick things off at 2:30 today. Mm-hmm. The Magic and the Raptors are at 5. Clippers Warriors tonight at 8:00. Spurs Nuggets at 10:30 p.m. tonight. And greatest opportunity for an upset. I'll turn this over to the panel. Out of the brackets that are out here right now, for what you guys see, who's the one team you think might be able to pull off an upset in a 7-game series here in the NBA playoffs?
Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City. I I like Oklahoma City.
I think this is a team that was a two seed for a lot of the season. Paul George is playing a lot like an MVP. I know he's a little banged up with shoulder soreness now, but you know, Portland doesn't have Nurkic. He's out with an injury. We saw Portland get upset in this same exact position last season when they were the three seed by Anthony Davis. That's right. The Pelicans.
Yep. Yeah.
And this, I just think Oklahoma City has the more talented roster.
They're the sixth seed over in the West. They start off tomorrow, late game, 10:30 p.m. against the Portland Trail Blazers and Damian Lillard. It feels weird saying the Trail Blazers are the three in the West.
It kind of
it is kind of crept
up.
Yeah.
Like towards the end of the season, they just kind of made a run, and a lot of people kind of like Houston kind of fell back towards the end of the season, didn't really care it seemed, and for whatever reason they allowed themselves to fall to the four.
I don't trust Houston, and I'll explain why in a second.
I think the season with going back and forth between Damian Lillard and Westbrook is going to be watchable basketball, because I've been seeing them kind of talking to each other between games. Like there's clips of them like kind of getting into it, so that'll be fun. Spice each other up.
For the pettiness, yes.
The thing I like about that matchup is both those guys will try to rip your head off.
Yes.
They're not out there to be friends with anybody. They're not part of this friendly NBA today. Those two want to rip each other's heads off.
And I like that, because that's the era I grew up in.
That's how it should be.
Yeah, I agree. I don't like them all riding banana boats and
especially
being
in the
friends.
Playoffs.
Yeah, you're supposed to be enemies in the playoffs, but are the Warriors still the team to beat? Because like we've seen chinks in the armor this year. They didn't win 60 games this year. I know they still got the Splash Brothers and KD and Draymond and Boogie and Iggy and all of them. I mean, I get it. They got all that. But do you think they're vulnerable? Like, I'm looking in the West, and like, I'm glad you mentioned the Thunder, because I think the Thunder could actually really match up well with them.
I actually think the Thunder or who will play them in the Western Conference Finals because of Houston allowing themselves to fall to that four seed.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, they're still the team to beat. I just don't see anybody in the West especially beating them.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely the team to beat. They're just bored right now.
Yeah.
They know that they're the best. They win every single year, so they have to give us a little bit of drama, a little riffraff during the regular season. And then when they hit the playoffs, man, they're just going to kick it in high gear, and it's going to be business as usual. You know, what's Ric Flair's old saying? To be the man, you got to beat the man.
Exactly right.
Woo!
I mean, it feels like this year is the first year where they feel like a collection of parts to me, more than like a team.
You mentioned kicking it into high gear. I think they're also going to do that because this is probably the last year we see them as constructed. I think they'll get it together for one final run.
Who's out?
I think KD is a good chance to leave.
People keep saying KD to the Knicks, and I'm just like, don't the Knicks have like the worst management in the NBA? Like, why would he go there?
I mean, he might be expecting Zion Williamson to show up there.
They're saying Kyrie trying to team up. Kyrie, Kevin Durant, and Zion, would that be enough to contend in the East?
Get you in the playoffs.
Yeah, actually,
get you in the playoffs. Get you a five or six seed. I mean,
good start. In the East, that's probably top three, right? KD,
maybe four.
I don't know how Kyrie
or five.
And KD
say
would play together,
five,
but
it also depends on what Boston does if they lose Kyrie.
Yeah, I'm starting to think they're going to lose him for nothing. Like, I think they're going to end up. He's going to just walk as a free agent at the end of this year, and they're not going to get anything for him. I think they're going to let him walk too. Like, I think
they don't want him. Yeah,
I don't. Yeah, he's. I think he's been a little more. I mean, he is maybe the most talented point guard in the NBA. But
he's been somewhat of a cancer up there.
He's a headache.
He's getting to that point. Yeah, he's getting to that point. I was actually expecting him to end up in L.A. Like I kind of depended on Magic Johnson to bring him to L.A.
Right.
But look, I'm the president of the Lakers. I'm Magic Johnson, baby. I'm one of the best point guards of all time. Won't you come here and learn from me? Kobe Bryant, you already consider him a mentor. Rob Pelinka's the GM. That was Kobe Bryant's agent. Like, it all sets up for him to come here, and he made up with LeBron, which I thought him doing that in public was basically a way to say, okay, I need to make sure that door is open at the end of the year so I don't close off L.A. because me and LeBron ended the way we ended. I think he intentionally did that in public so that would be –
Well, he should have because he made the fight in public. So
yeah,
if you make
did.
The fight in public, you better make the makeup in public too.
Do you think the Bucks could beat the Warriors in the seven-game series? No.
I would get, if I was going to give any team from the East a chance, it would probably be the Sixers if Embiid can get healthy.
I've liked their starting lineup. Ever since they got Tobias Harris, I was like, that's the best starting five in the East. And they match up really well against the Warriors.
They really probably have the best six or seven.
They really do.
Six or seven guys.
Yeah, they really do. But I just like Joel Embiid versus Boogie. You got, I guess, Steph would be running around after J.J. Redick.
I guess you got to put Clay on Ben Simmons because of the height or whatever. Then you got Tobias Harris and Draymond going at it. I don't even know who would guard KD. Jimmy Butler would be on KD. Wow, that's actually I kind of want
to
see
that.
This.
That would go to a game seven, I think. Yeah.
I used to too.
But just, I mean, playoffs are all about matchups.
But see, I don't think people think the Sixers are going to make it that far. Like, it feels like people think 76ers are going to probably flame out around second round or so.
It's hard to feel any way about any of these teams in the East because it's so odd not having LeBron James.
Yeah,
right.
It's just been a pencil in for so long.
That's the elephant in the room. I'm glad you brought it up. This is the first year in, 8 years that LeBron won't be in the Eastern Conference Finals, let alone the Finals. Yeah. It does feel weird looking at the Eastern Conference playoffs and not seeing the Cavs there and like knowing that no matter what they do, no matter what seed, they were like a 4 seed last year, if I'm not mistaken, the Cavs.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to probably get through all of this because none of you have LeBron James. And I don't know who's coming out of the East.
I think the Bucks come out of the East.
I don't think I trust them enough.
But that's the thing.
Yeah,
we don't know that we can trust any of these.
Right. I don't know who to trust. Yeah. The Bucks.
And that's why I say just coming out of the East. Yeah. Whoever comes out of the East, I still think loses the chip. You know what I mean? But I think it's going to be the Bucks for whatever reason. I think it's going to be them.
Sawyer's got a stat on Steph Curry.
Yeah, so I was reading this just honestly before I came in here. So Steph Curry this season is number one in the offensive rating in the NBA, number one in net rating, which is like your offensive and defensive performance, and number one in cumulative plus or minus in the NBA with plus 700 on the year. Man. And then someone in the comment section was, is Steph Curry actually underrated? I mean, with the stuff that he's doing, you don't put him in that conversation of like players that are like his stats, and he's third in RPM behind Paul George and Harden, and second in ORPM behind Harden. It's kind of crazy.
There is a reason we're talking about Kevin Durant leading. The Warriors are Steph Curry's team.
Oh, yeah.
Whether the public acknowledges that on a regular basis or not, that is his team. They won a championship before KD got there.
They go the way he goes. Like, if he's out, they are a 500 squad, which is sad because of the talent that's still there without him. But he is the straw that stirs the drink for them.
But it's like we've forgotten how great he is because Kevin Durant's there.
Yeah. I mean, he averaged 27 points per game this year, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. He shot 43% from 3. 47% from the floor. No one's talking about him as MVP.
We're spoiled.
Not one person.
We expect it.
Yeah, we've gotten used to it. It's almost like the Jordan effect.
Yeah.
We're like, Jordan probably should have won more league MVPs than he did, but.
Well, you can say the same thing about LeBron.
You can. Yeah,
LeBron
doesn't have as many
MVPs, but we just get, people just expect it.
I like every time I go to basketballreference.com and I go to Steph's page, it's got his nicknames on here. So his nicknames are Steph, Baby-faced assassin. Yep.
I like that one.
Chef Curry, the human torch, and Threesis.
I never heard the Threesis one.
I never heard that one either. While we're on the topic of, Kemba maybe even leaving Charlotte, Steph Curry actually put out a poll, I think last night, of the best to worst popcorns in every single NBA stadium, and Spectrum Center was second to last, I think behind New Orleans or something like that.
That sucks.
You remember a couple of months ago the thing came out about the worst sporting venues to eat at or whatever, and Spectrum Center and Bank of America Stadium were like dead last or something.
Spectrum Center is so horribly overpriced.
They just had the ACC tournament down there, and I meant to ask Josh because he was down there for it while we were broadcasting these, you didn't forget to not eat anything in the Spectrum Center, right? And he's like, I'm eating a bowl of ice cream or something right now. I'm like, you're going to die. Because whatever's going on at Spectrum Center, I don't know if they got it cleaned up or not. But 336-777-1600 is the number to call if you want to chime in on this topic. Real quick, Magic Johnson stepping down as the president of the LA Lakers earlier this week. What should the Lakers do this offseason? I don't hear should they fire Luke Walton. I guess they read my mind because they mutually separated yesterday. Mutual separation means one side really wants you gone, but they don't want you to deal with the embarrassment of saying you've been fired. So basically, they're like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to tell them we've mutually decided to separate, but really, we don't want you here anymore, and we're going to send you out the door on your way. Are you cool with this? I mean, what's he supposed to say?
He's been on the way out the door since LeBron got there.
Yeah. I've always thought Tyronn Lue was the best fit. He's a former Laker. He coached LeBron. He's got a ring. He knows how to deal with him.
I go the other way. I like Monty Williams.
Ooh.
The other guy they're mentioning for that.
I heard Ty Lue's the front runner right now. I don't know if you guys heard that. Yeah, he's definitely.
Well, like I said, he's played for the Lakers. I mean, he's got everything you need that they would want because they don't need a young coach or somebody to be with them for the next 10 years. They just need somebody to navigate the next three. and to get another guy over there.
If you want another guy, though, Monty Williams is one of the most beloved coaches the NBA. When his wife got killed in that car accident, tragically, in Oklahoma City, it was unreal the amount of guys that left their teams to fly in to pay their respects to him and his family.
Was he with the Pelicans, too, for a little bit?
Head coach for the Pelicans. He was an assistant in Oklahoma City when that happened.
Was he with the Pelicans when Chris Paul was there? Is that right? Or somewhere around that time? Or was it right after?
It may have been the end of Chris Paul's.
But yeah, you're totally correct that the players love Monty Williams. I don't know. Yeah. It would be interesting to see. But here was a question I had. Out of all the one-year deal guys the Lakers signed, like Rajon Rondo, Lance Stephenson, JaVale McGee, KCP, if you could pick one, which one of those guys would you bring back to the Lakers and sign them maybe to a 2 or 3 year deal? I like Lance Stephenson personally, but
I mean, if you go through them, Dez, all right, let's take a look at KCP, right?
Yeah.
All right, his shooting definitely regressed as we got toward the end of the season. You know, I mean, I don't know. He looked more like a project and was just disinterested in the whole
team, forgot he was on the team.
The whole game.
Half the season.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Totally forgot he was there.
All right, so let's look at Lance Stephenson. Does he really add anything to the Lakers? I mean, yeah, he has that's also the guitar deal is probably the best thing that he has, right?
Hilarious.
Yeah, I love him.
Yeah, he's entertaining.
I used to hate the dude, too. I'd be like, why is this dude out here blowing in people's ears and like just acting a fool? He got to L.A. and I kind of saw him in a different light. Like, okay, he's a spark off the bench. Yeah. He can create his own shot. He's got a jumper. He's got handles.
He's a great fit for L.A., though. I will say that.
Yeah, he's perfect for the Lakers.
I mean, he wasn't a great basketball player, but yeah, he fits into. I mean, the Air Cam guitar is awesome.
Love it.
I mean, he's showtime with that. But man, maybe Lance Stephenson is the closest one. Because then, if you look at what is it, McGee?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Zion Williamson will need a backup. I don't know. But I mean,
maybe they can
ship him out there.
If I was them, I wouldn't mind. If I was a Lakers fan, I wouldn't mind seeing them keep JaVale McGee just because he's proven at times that he can at least
and they're
going to
need
on a high level.
The Lakers messed up by not re-signing Julius Randle.
Oh yeah.
And they messed up by drafting Lonzo Ball instead of De'Aaron Fox. They should have. And my understanding is Magic wanted De'Aaron Fox, and they kind of overruled him because they wanted Lonzo. Lonzo was just going to be an average player.
Big baller brand for life, baby.
The shoes, I think, is the reason why he keeps having all these ankle issues or whatever. We got a real quick. This is a regular segment we started each week here with our intern, Aaron. Should I keep calling you intern, Aaron? Because you're not technically an intern anymore. I mean, it's kind of like your name.
I guess we'll stick with it until I come up with a new catch.
Yeah, you
got to
come up
myself.
With something like a superstar Aaron or something like that. I don't know.
Co-owner or something like that.
So 1 minute with intern Aaron. Your question for the day, sir. Who are you picking to win the NBA Finals, the Warriors or the field, and why? Go ahead and give my man some music and have at it.
Picking in NBA Finals, choosing between the Warriors or the field, it's actually an easy discussion. It's the Warriors. They're still first place in the West. Yeah, they haven't been as good in recent years, but for what? They've proven everything already. They got nothing to prove. So until somebody does actually beat them, I'm going with the Warriors. The Rockets is the sexy pick, but it's not going to happen. You know, it's just not going to happen.
So no Rockets, no Thunder?
No, definitely not the Thunder.
No Bucks?
Definitely not the Bucks.
76ers?
Absolutely not.
Celtics?
Nope.
I'm running out of team. 76ers?
Not even the Nuggets?
The Nuggets won't even get out of the first round.
I'm willing to put a
steak dinner on them not getting out the first round. Where are you at, Aaron? Do you really mean
I'm
that?
I'm looking at popping the Spurs. And I'm looking at their playoff experience, and I just don't see it.
Aaron,
Aaron, hold on now. I heard a challenge here. Are you saying you will? What's the bet? You're betting a steak dinner?
That
Denver will get out of the first round?
That Denver will definitely get out of the first round? Because I could have sworn I heard intern Aaron say they will not get out of the first round.
That's what he said.
They're not going to beat Pop from the Spurs.
Listen, I don't know if you ever watched the Cosby Show, but there is a challenge.
Yes. So wait, okay. So we're not going to do this like we do it on the drive, where it's like kind of like this kind of half bet, and then we don't figure out the punishment,
I
and then somebody
put it
loses,
out there.
And then
we're
not doing that.
That's a you and Josh thing.
We're not doing that. We are not doing that. So we're going to have this, like, I'm going to put this on the.
Hey, this is a Texas Roadhouse steak dinner, is what I'm going to
say. Be clear, because Aaron has extremely high taste in steaks, from my understanding.
Texas Roadhouse.
Well, where you want to go, Aaron? I mean, whatever you want to pay for is cool with me.
Wait, hold on. So
I was trying to make it light on you.
So the bet is the Nuggets will.
Not get out of
the first round.
Right. And Rod has the Nuggets getting out of the first round.
All right. Rod has the Nuggets. And Aaron says, forget the Nuggets. They ain't making it. No Nuggets. I'm writing all this down, try it, so that I've got some kind of. And so we've got it in writing. The bet, the winner pays for a steak dinner.
Yeah. Aaron, where are we going?
I mean, if you win, you can pick the steak dinner of your choosing. But if I win, I get steak dinner of my choosing.
Oh,
how's that
now
sound?
That's different.
That is different.
Because he's going to be like on like some Ruth Chris type tip, probably.
Oh, that's nice.
I know that's what you're thinking. I'm taking my man to Fleming's or something.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with that.
This is good. So this might be, because we're off next week. We're on vacation for the Easter holiday. That series might be over by then.
It depends on how
about
long
a week,
that
It just depends. We'll see. So we've got that in writing. So yes, challenge.
Aaron, did you agree to that?
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, cool. Okay, agreed to this steak dinner. Rod and Aaron getting it in. All right, perfect. So back to your regularly scheduled programming here. we got to take a break. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to take a look at the state of college basketball and shoe companies. Michael Avenatti. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name right. He was Stormy Daniels' lawyer. He also just got indicted on like 36 counts of fraud and a bunch of other things. Before that, though, he basically accused Nike of paying kids to go to their sponsored schools, including phenom Zion Williamson. How likely is it that shoe companies are steering kids to certain schools, and do you even care if they are? Plus, should Duke retire Zion's number at Cameron? Is he the best player ever at Duke, or is that just a crazy take on Zion Williamson and Duke? We're going to get into all that and more. A little ACC basketball next on the Rundown.
Shut up.
Sit down.
Are you ready?
Stand by.
You're listening to the Rundown with Desmond Johnson.
That's right.
ACC basketball brought to you by Giada's Trattoria. Giada's Trattoria restaurant in Kernersville on Main Street with their signature stone oven, culture of hospitality, and North Carolina's best pizza. Giada's lets you and your family and friends share an authentic Italian experience with a twist. Everything is better by the stone oven at Giada's. I've been wanting to get into this conversation really all week long because I didn't really hear it, and we've got to talk about it. It's a kind of an elephant in the room, and before we even get into it, we can't prove anything we're about to say. This is all just talking amongst friends. We don't know exactly what's going on, but we got to address this whole situation with the shoe companies and these schools. And before we do that, friend of the program Ed is on the line, and he wants to talk a little bit about ACC basketball too. Ed, what's going on, man? How you doing this morning?
Yeah, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I was going to ask you real quick, Des, did you get to see the Nike Summit last night?
No, I didn't get a chance to.
Yeah, Cole Anthony had a good game. He had 25 points, I think 5-6 rebounds, 5 or 6 assists, and they beat the world team 93-87.
How are you liking Cole? I mean, because you've seen him a couple times now. How do you think Cole
looks? I really like him. I think he's as good or better than Kobe White, you know, in my personal opinion. And his parents, his mother is an attorney. She lives in New York. And, of course, his father lives in Florida. Mm-hmm. They were both out for the game, and they also made a visit to the Oregon campus, and I guess they're the biggest competition. But I want to get to the Zion Williamson situation. Like I say, there's really no proof, but the word going around, and I've seen where Duke is going to have an internal investigation. To me, that's like having the fox guard the chicken house. But anyway, the reason I say that in sincerity, go back and look what happened with Suleiman and the two sexual assault, you know, accusations, and then also in the Lance Thomas, you know,
right,
jewelry. So
jewelry
that's just my personal opinion there. But anyway, supposedly I listened to David Glenn earlier in the week, and supposedly Zion's mother has been a consultant for Nike. So what the hell is she consulting? Mm-hmm. But for 3 years. And really, there's no way that they can bring down Duke unless they've got, you know, documentation that Duke was in cahoots with Nike and, you know, paying Zion or any other players to come to them. And if, and also, you know, if you don't have any wiretap information. So, you know, and I don't think the NCAA will actually get involved unless there is something that comes about. But I'd like you guys' personal opinion on that, too.
Great call, as always, Ed. Thanks for listening to the Rundown, man. You hit all the hot spots. Here's my take on the whole situation. Clearly, if you go back, this really started about 5-6 years ago. If I went back and looked at the top recruiting classes since like 2011 or whatever, and four schools stand out more times than not: Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, Arizona. Those are the four schools that have basically been at or near the top of the recruiting classes for the past 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. Duke and Kentucky are Nike schools. Kansas and Arizona are Adidas schools.
Arizona's Nike, actually.
Oh, Arizona's Nike. I'm sorry. So they've been floating around the top. Duke has had the number one recruiting class 3 of the past 4 seasons. They've landed the number one player, I think, the past 3 years in a row. This past year, they got the number 1, 2, and 3 ranked recruits.
Mm-hmm.
I refuse to sit here and just say, well, these kids are going to Duke because of Coach K. That's been the main thing people say. Well, they want to play for Coach K because he coached the Olympic team and he did this and did that. He started coaching the Olympic team in 2008. This is 2019. Those kids were 11 and 12 years old during the Redeem team or whatever, with Kobe and LeBron and Dwight Howard and all those guys. I find it hard to believe that they're like, you know, I want to go to Duke because I want to be coached by Coach K for 8 months before I go off on my journey. Now, I do know that Duke, they pitch these kids like, we're going to help you build your brand, help you prepare yourself for the pros. Like, they've switched their pitch to, we're going to get you in and out of here in 8 months, and we're going to help you do it better than anybody else can, including Kentucky. That's out there. We know they're doing that. I don't believe that K or any of their coaching staff or anybody at Duke, for that matter, is aware if Nike or anyone is funneling kids to them. They might just be believing their own smoke, like, hey, we're just padded recruiting, and we just got kids coming just because they want to be here. But I find it really hard to believe that they're just coming there for that.
I think blind eye is the correct word for that.
Plausible deniability.
Yeah. That's the thing. Right. Here's the thing. You can do this with football, too. Because going back, the NCAA is never going to do anything to mark their blue blood programs.
Nope.
You go back to Alabama a few years ago, and they hit every program at that school with sanctions but football.
They knew where the money was.
You mean to tell me that that of all those programs, the basketball teams are cheating? The women's basketball team is cheating, but Alabama football is not cheating. How is that believable at all? But like, I mean, the NCAA is never going to look into this because they don't want to know if Duke did anything. And even if Zion's mom did get paid by Nike, the way that this will be construed, if it ever comes out, is that it was funneled through an AAU program.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Duke didn't know.
South Carolina Supreme. That's his. They built an AAU team just for him. John Morant played on that team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a weird topic because we know Adidas is doing this. Louisville's in trouble. Miami got in trouble. Kansas is being investigated. We know that Adidas did this. My whole thing is, why would Adidas be bidding against themselves? There's another entity out there they're bidding against. Nike's the biggest basketball shoe company in the world. It makes sense to assume it's probably Nike that they're bidding against. So I don't blame the schools. I blame the shoe companies.
Going back to the Blue Blood program, just another example. Of all those Adidas schools you mentioned, the only one that hasn't really been touched is Kansas.
Yeah.
By the way.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
they kind of left them out.
DeSosa.
Yeah.
Louisville hit the most of it. They've held him out.
Right.
But Kansas really hasn't been affected by that.
And all this stuff so far with the Adidas stuff, it's not NCAA. It's the FBI. Like, they're doing their investigation for whatever. Right. But the NCAA hasn't done anything regarding. It's almost like they're waiting to find out what happens. But like you said, Ryan, they don't want Kansas on probation. They don't want Duke on probation. They don't want to smear the image of K.
What did everybody say on that Elite Eight Sunday when Duke and Kentucky both lost about the Final Four?
Oh,
that the ratings were going to be terrible.
Yeah, no blue bloods, so exactly. Everything was going to be tanked. And just to be fair, yes, I'm going to include Carolina in that discussion as well. The African American scandal with the classes and stuff. Carolina gets off.
Basketball didn't get hit.
Yeah, basketball didn't get hit, but women's basketball did.
But football did.
Yeah, the men's basketball team. They didn't get hit with anything, but everybody else did.
Everybody knows these kids are
coming to these schools for the history of academic excellence.
Yes, they're coming for those two basket weaving classes in the fall that they have to go to, and that's it.
There was you guys know the Onion, right? The fake news source. Someone said it was an article that was like Duke professors really upset over loss of like a student and had a picture of Zion Williamson or something like that. I was like, yeah,
academic excellence.
I mean, I'm not, and I got to make it really clear. I'm not saying Duke is taking money or knowingly bringing in kids that way. But when you sit there and you just kind of step back and look at it, it's like, okay, Kay has been coaching at Duke for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Not once did he have back-to-back classes as highly ranked as these teams that are coming in here, to the point where he's swapping out five kids at a time.
To an extent, one and done has changed that a little bit.
One and done has changed that, and he's adapted to that, and he's doing Coach Cal better than Coach Cal was doing at this point, because now they're getting they're getting everybody.
They're crushing Kentucky as far as recruiting. I mean,
but I got to just sit here and be like, okay, how are they getting everybody? Like, why are these top three kids, why would they all decide to come to Duke every year? I get it, 1 year here, 1 year there, but there's no spreading out. It's all going to the same four schools. And someone mentioned to me, like, well, why wouldn't they want to go to North Carolina? Carolina just got off a four-year investigation with the NCAA. Like, they haven't had a top 10 kid to pay. Like,
yeah,
Justin Jackson was the last top 10 kid they had.
Yeah, Carolina needs a little bit of time to be able to let the dust
build it back up, and then we start.
Yeah, but at the same time, man, I'll have to be honest with you. Regardless of what's going on, if they're getting paid, if they're not getting paid, I mean, to me, they deserve something. They deserve
the kids.
Which brings me to my final question.
They deserve something.
I don't care if they get paid.
That was my final question of the segment. Does anyone even care if Nike's paying these families or if Adidas is throwing them some money to go someplace? Because in my head, I'm thinking, is that illegal? Would that be illegal? But it is. But
it's not like they're being paid by Nike to shave points.
Right.
To lose
right.
to other Nike schools or something like that. Like, that would be different.
And it makes sense because, like, people are like, well, they didn't pay Luke May or something like that. I'm like, well, Luke May was the 100th ranked prospect in his class.
Yeah,
why would Nike be spending money on these lower ranked kids? It's just like top 10 guys, guys that they think.
Guys are going to be NBA.
Yeah, that they could potentially sign to a shoe deal if it works out.
Continue their brand, yeah.
So now they have an inside track on a Zion Williamson because they helped out. Well, allegedly helped out maybe his family and helped him decide where to go. And him going to Duke, I mean, like I said, everybody in the triad knows I'm not a Duke fan, but him going to Duke was the best decision he could have possibly made.
Right.
Because if he went to Carolina, he would have been sharing a lot of spotlight, a lot of minutes. It wouldn't have been the same situation. I've been on record. Duke has the best social media program of any college basketball program I've ever seen.
Yeah.
They are top notch and they are on point. They do a lot of cool stuff. And he came in with millions of Instagram followers already. I think it's safe to say that Zion's even bigger now than he was when he stepped on campus at Duke.
Of course.
Lot of that's to do for playing for Duke. And the brand got bigger.
The other part of that is he's a great player. He's phenomenal
on
that
court.
That's why I get annoyed at the people that complain about all the coverage of him. Like, I get it. But at the same time, like, you don't hate the kid for that.
No,
I hate the media coverage.
You hate ESPN for that, but the kid is, like, he's handled this so well.
He really has. He has. He's got his head on straight. He reminds me of young LeBron. Like, young LeBron
but
came
listen,
in at
man,
17, 18, kind of wired the same way.
But a lot of that media coverage that we hate, I'm telling you, to me, that's kind of worth it, too. They don't show any – he doesn't have any Rudy Poot stuff of him out there.
No.
I mean, all his stuff is excellent.
The
worst thing is that he slid into girls'
that's
DMs
right, yeah.
Carolina. That's the worst thing.
Yeah, he was trying to holler at some shit in Carolina. And even then, everybody was like, shoot your shot, Zion. I mean, do your thing, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody's like, I bet she came over there. I bet she came over to help him study, I bet.
I just want to point out that you guys acting like Luke May doesn't have any star power, and I think that his line of casual dress shoes, when those come out, are just going to be phenomenal.
Are you sure it's going to be dress shoes and not like camo jackets?
Did anybody see the picture that was going around Final Four weekend of the Virginia Cavalier mascot? And it was saying that it's captioned like Luke May figured out a way to sneak into the Final Four. And if you look at the picture, the mascot looks like Luke May dressed up as a Cavalier. He's got like the sideburn, like beard cut thing with the goatee. Right. And all. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. Like, if you look up the Virginia Cavalier mascot, look at it and look at it as if you're looking at Luke May, and it looks like Luke May.
Man, y'all are wrong for that.
That's hilarious.
We gotta take a break and come back, finish up the show. In the house with Ryan Stone from IMG. Coming up, odds and ends, rapid fire round. We get 1 minute to debate random topics. You do not want to miss this next on The Rundown.
Clap your hands and stomp your feet.
Yeah!
It's going to be one big party.
Yeah, I'm on.
Back to The Rundown with Desmond Johnson.
Download full episodes of The Rundown and The Best of the Drive with Josh Graham at sportshubtriad.com. It's super easy. Just go to the website. Right at the very top of the page, you'll see two SoundCloud spots where you can just literally click on the arrow, download it to your phone, download it to your laptop or tablet, and you can enjoy The Rundown and The Best of the Drive anytime during the week. This episode will be up in probably about the next hour or so, so you'll be able to listen to this throughout the week. Let's get into odds and ends. This is how it works. Our producer extraordinaire, Sawyer, will set a stop clock for 1 minute. The end of 1 minute, we'll hear a buzzer sound, six topics, rapid fire to end the show. Let's go.
All right, starting out, you're the Hornets, and you somehow land the second pick in the NBA draft via the lottery ping pong balls. Who do you pick?
Second pick. So Zion is off the table, unless the Knicks do the Knicks, and they end up picking like John Morant or somebody first. And everybody's like, what? Second pick, Hornets?
I think second.
RJ Barrett?
I think second pick, you need to have some idea of what Kimba wants to do.
Right.
If Kimba is leaving, I may go John Morant. Kimba staying, I'd take RJ Barrett.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean,
that'd be pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point right there. But the key is, you know, you might better have Kimba in that draft room if you want to keep him. You know, who is it that you can play with? Who you think you're going to get to the playoffs
that's
with
a good point
next year, Kimba? And if it's this guy, RJ Barrett, we're going with him. If you think it's Morant, we're going with him.
There's only at the second pick. I mean, you're talking RJ Barrett, John Morant, maybe Rui Hachimura from Gonzaga. They got him going fourth.
I think it's down to Moran or Barrett.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too.
Barrett 6'7", 210, shooting guard. Reminds me of Tracy McGrady. He'd be a good pick with Kemba in the backcourt.
He's a scorer.
All right.
All right, next, if you had to choose today, what team gets out of the NBA Eastern Conference?
We touched on this a little bit in our NBA segment, but
I already said the Sixers. So
you got the Sixers.
I'll go with the Sixers if Embiid stays healthy.
What about you, Rod?
Oh, the Bucks come out, man. The Bucks play great defense, in my opinion. You know, I'm a dang on defensive guy.
Yeah.
They also have a pretty good core of players around them. They play very well together. And then the number one thing, you can say what you want. We love James Harden, but guess what? Giannis, however you say his last name, Antetokounmpo is the best player in the NBA left in the playoffs right now.
Only team to make the 60 wins, the Milwaukee Bucks.
That's why they're coming out.
They're good at home and away. They're 33-8 at home, 27-14 away, 40-12 in conference play. I'm leaning towards the Bucks. I don't know a whole lot about them, so I didn't really watch a whole lot of them this year. But I'm with Ryan. I was high on the 76ers as soon as they got Tobias Harris and kind of put that starting five together: Ben Simmons, J.J. Redick, Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, Jimmy Butler. That's a pretty good squad. If Embiid is healthy, I'm going to ride with the 76ers too.
All right, next up, NASCAR had the Food City 500 in Bristol last weekend, a site that can seat over 130,000, only had roughly 30 to 40,000 in the stands, and Bristol didn't even sell the corner seats on the stadium, providing super bad optics on TV of an empty stadium. Is NASCAR in trouble?
I would say so, because as programming manager here at the Sports Hub, I made the decision to not run NASCAR this season, and not a single person complained about it. So that, I mean, like in terms of listeners, so that kind of told us, okay, well, we might have should have done that a year earlier. I mean, I don't know what's up with NASCAR. Well, I do know they stretched out too far.
It's
but
such a niche following sport.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like hockey, that to an extent, like today's age of social media and all the access that you can, ways of accessing things, like it was going to hurt the ratings for NASCAR.
Yeah. They should have did more like the way the NBA and Major League Baseball have embraced social media. Like, why not put cameras in every car or something and have that streaming live on Facebook or Twitter, or have the pit crew tweeting out or something, just to kind of bring in people. But I think you're right, Ryan. I think they expanded too fast. They got to tracks like Texas and California, places where people, I mean, some people care about NASCAR, but not like North Wilkesboro or mm-hmm. Martinsville.
Yeah. Right.
They got away from the old tracks, and they kind of left their fan base behind.
I got a solution for them. add some left turns, some ramps, maybe a few pedestrians.
That might help.
Yeah, that would help a lot.
I might actually check that out. Yeah. They had some ramp, like a site bike.
All right, next up, is Virginia's Tony Bennett an elite coach?
Now, I would say yes.
Absolutely. Like, I don't.
I was keeping him out of the room.
I don't know why this was a conversation. Definitely.
I was trying to think like earlier this week, who are the coaches I'd put ahead of him? And there's only like four.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, him and Jay Wright are both in that elite group now. Like, I don't know who else you're putting ahead of like those guys. Like outside of four or five guys.
I was the main one saying I like Tony Bennett, but I had him in like the Mark Few, Jim Boeheim category.
You said he had to win a national first.
For me, he needed to win a natty or at least get to a Final Four.
Final Four. When he made the Final Four, I was like, okay.
Well, I had him as an elite coach this past year, Dez. You knew that. In November.
Yeah, you did.
And I gave you the reasons. Nobody could name anyone he had on his team, and he dominated the ACC for the last 3 years. If that's not coaching, I don't know what coaching is.
I mean, he's really had like one NBA stud.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
really?
And if that's not coaching, I don't know what coaching is.
I mean, Virginia frustrates me so much to watch.
It's aesthetically pleasing to watch.
Right.
It's like watching a rock fight and like a mudslide. It's just horribly slow, but shout outs to Virginia. You're the.
They were better this year to watch than.
They were. They were more fluid.
Yeah.
They're your.
Well, they could
champion.
Score better this year.
Yeah, that's
Andre Hunter.
All right. Best landing place for Zion, Knicks, Suns, Cavs, or the Hornets?
I mean, you're going to ask Hornets. I mean, I brought this up on the drive the other day. What if magic happened again? Because this is how they landed Zoe. Like I said earlier in the show, they missed the playoffs by one game Larry Johnson's rookie year, lucked out in the lottery, got the second overall pick. Magic lucked out in the lottery, got the first overall pick, got Shaq. We got the next best thing in Zoe. The Hornets have the lowest chance to get in the top three in the lottery. But if they did... put Zion down on the bottom block with Kemba. I think that convinced Kemba to stay.
Can I
dude? Look, if we got Kemba, I mean, yeah, if we got Zion,
he's from South Carolina.
Convince him to stay,
If we got Zion, like not only would that convince Kemba to stay, we'd get a whole bunch of other players like that would want to come in.
That would help. I feel like this is a perfect storm for the Knicks, though.
Yeah,
like the marketing,
they can't mess this
his
up.
Brand.
Yeah,
like Zion Williamson will be a Knick.
Now, if we're talking just roster, I thought the Suns actually roster wise would be the best fit for him because you put him beside DeAndre Ayton, you got Josh Jackson at the three, Devin Booker at
the
two.
Knicks do have a ton of cap space.
They do.
If you draft him and bring in like a Kevin Durant,
but their owner will eventually screw it up.
That's what I'm saying. Dolan's going to mess this up at some point.
Yeah, James Dolan will screw it up.
That's crazy. That's wild. We're all like, well, the Knicks are going to mess this up somehow. They haven't even got the first pick yet, but they'll figure out a way to screw this up.
All right. Next up, on a scale of 1 to 100, what are the chances Kemba Walker starts the 2019-2020 NBA season in a Hornets uniform?
Well, what were the chances of them getting Zion?
It's like 10% chance of getting up in the top.
10%.
10%.
Why? What are you coming back for?
I don't know.
Other than money.
I mean, Charlotte is the banking capital of the world, they say.
They can pay him more. That's it.
Right now, today, and we'll probably ask this question every week until July 1st when he signs. Right now, I'm going to put it 50-50. I don't know if he knows.
I agree with you on 50-50. Like I said, he was asked some exiting questions, and he had an exit interview. And everything was, I don't know, which was very scary.
He was very confident at the beginning of the year. I want to be here. This is where I want to end my career.
And now it's one of those deals. He wants to make it to the playoffs, and he's going to wait and see how the Hornets do in the draft.
Man, Kyrie said the Hornets, same stuff.
And if the Hornets could be successful in the draft, I think
he won so much in college. I have to think Kemba wants to win, man. Charlotte has not done anything to help him win.
Twice. He's been to the playoffs twice in his 8 years in Charlotte. Don't forget, download the free WSJS Sports Hub app from Google Play or iTunes. Don't forget, again, to check out Sports Carolina Monthly Podcast Center. Hear weekly podcasts like The Rundown, Four Man Rush, A Stone's Throw with Ryan Stone, and more. Now available in all major podcast formats, including Spotify, Google, Apple Podcasts, and more. Brought to you by our friends at Ray's Auto Body and Wrecker Service. We are out. We are off next week for Easter. Best of the Rundown will be on instead. We will be back the following week with the NFL draft coverage. Peace.